Good evening, folks. Hello. I'd like to call the February 7th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Roll call of members, please. Oh, I guess we start with a pledge.
Yeah, why don't we do the pledge first?
Whatever. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
The Pledge of Allegiance is the flag of the United States of America.
Now we'll have a roll call of members.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk will be here later this evening. Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
I am present.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desk.
First order of business tonight, I'd like to welcome to the microphone Brett Bossert from the Community Arts Partnership and Gail Holzwarhoff, the Tompkins County Poet Laureate. Good evening, and thank you both for coming.
Good evening. Thank you. I just wanted to start off by thanking everyone in the legislature for recognizing the importance of the arts in our community. It's not surprising that Tompkins County, place that historically housed great writers like Nabokov, Alex Haley, E.B. White, and many others, was one of the first counties in the country to have a poet laureate. We're now on, I believe, our fifth so far, and I thank you for allowing Gail to step up to the plate and swing for the fences again in 2012. Last year, she put a lot of work in her post as poet laureate, and I'll toot her horn because I don't know that she would come up and do it herself. In addition to helping to coordinate many of the events at last year's Spring Rites Finger Lakes Literary Festival, an offshoot of the work she did there was to collect an anthology of poems written by immigrant poets to Ithaca called Far From Home. We housed a reading and sort of a publication launch of the book at our art space over the Community Arts Partnership late last year, and I'm very excited to see what Gail's plans are for 2012. So thanks again for keeping the arts important in Tompkins County and making sure that we're appreciated as a community that loves and supports the arts.
Thank you, Brett, and thank you for your help in bringing forward such quality folks. Thank you. Gail.
Thank you very much. Writing poetry for special occasions, and especially dear to my heart is this little book, which one can find at Buffalo Street Books or somewhere in town. I have some spare copies if any of you would like one, but I was so impressed by the quality of the poems that emerged from this project, and some of them with the help of teachers of English as a foreign language and some without, and one of them was written by a woman from Liberia who's been here for some years. She was a refugee from the war in Liberia, and I thought you might like to hear what she has to say because she writes very well, and it's called Refusal. "The shoes don't fit," she cried, voice pitched high with frustration of countless hours of searching for the perfect pair. "Perhaps we should try another street, another store. This is the ninth store, the fifth street, but none fit as they should. What will you put on to go out? What will people say when they see your worn pair? Dare I tell her that it is not the shoes, it is not the cut, the style, the size. If I turn my feet just so or squeeze my toes together, the shoes would fit quite well. If I adjusted and tucked in my heels, these would be the shoes for me. Dare I tell her the shoes fit? It is the feet that refuse to adjust, to turn sideways, to slip into the contours. The feet refuse to conform, to change, to adjust, to fit. Dare I tell her, my feet shut what I dare not." And it's a nice card, huh? By Jackie Sayre. And I've also written a poem which I believe is well suited to a situation that has lasted for some time in the legislature, and it's called Compromise. If we cannot bend like reeds in a stream, we'll snap in wind like tall pines, brittle however strong they seemed while holding stiff to their battle lines. Without compromise, our compacts will falter, and marriage first among the casualties. The vows we make before the altar are kept by reeds, not rigid trees. Thank you. And I have a copy for you all to take and ponder upon.
Thank you so much, Gail. And please feel free to come back without an invitation if the occasion presents itself and the spirit moves. Thank you so much. And next, I'd like to turn to Pam Mackesy, Chair of the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, for a couple of special awards.
Thank you, Martha. Is this on? It is? Okay. It feels like it's not. Anyway, I have this is a wonderful opportunity to give out wonderful awards here. Our tourism program that is run through our room tax program just has done amazing things in our community. And having sat on the Strategic Tourism Board as a liaison, I saw firsthand the kinds of effort that have been made in this community. And we all benefit from all the programs that they have. And so what the Tourism Board partners did, they set up an award, an annual award. And the award recognizes individuals, organizations, and associations who, through their activities, have made an impact on the local economy by attracting visitors to Tompkins County. It is meant to encourage people who are not professionals in the field to think creatively about events and activities. Attracting and hosting groups and conventions in Tompkins County has a positive impact on the entire economy, increasing revenues from hotels, restaurants, retail sales, rental car agencies, airlines, and the airport. As a result, sales and room tax revenues increase, which allows the county to provide adequate services to its residents. And it also provides the funds to nurture and grow the many art and cultural organizations and events that take place throughout Tompkins County and make it the amazing place that it is. The first Tourism Partner Award was given to Alpha Phi Alpha, the first African-American fraternity in the country, for their 100th anniversary event in 2006 at Cornell University. And this year's recipients, the Turkey Shoot Lacrosse Tournament and the National Conference on Undergraduate Research Committee at Ithaca College set out to host events, but also provided a boost to our local economy, and businesses prospered as a result. Turkey Shoot and the NCUR Executive Committee at Ithaca College are fine examples of what it means to be a tourism partner. I would like to state the National Conference on Undergraduate Research, which took place last March, had 3,400 participants, and they slept in 2,500 hotel room nights, which was quite impressive. And then Mark Wantham has run the Turkey Shoot Lacrosse Tournament for, this is its 20th anniversary in our county, this last year. And that was held in over two weekends in November. It brought in 121 teams over two weekends, 1,500 players, and 1,200 to 1,500 family members. And, of course, hundreds of hotel rooms and nights were used as a result. So these people and these efforts are what we want and hope will continue. And the actions by these people, I think, are deserving our support. And so I would like you to come up. Anthony Hobson and Carol Henderson are here from Ithaca College. And Mark Wentham is the organizer of the turkey shoot. I would like you to come up and join us right here. So thank you very much. Okay, so we have here for you a resolution that was passed by the legislature for each group, and so I would like to give you each one of those, and then here, this is the plaque that was presented to you. To the NCUR Executive Committee of Ithaca College, the Tompkins County Legislature thanks you for making an outstanding contribution to the county and its residents and for enhancing the local economy by promoting it as a tourism destination. So here you go, Anthony. How did I miss your name? Okay. And this award goes to Mark Wenham, Turkey Shoot Lacrosse Tournament. The Tompkins County Legislature thanks you for making an outstanding contribution to the county and its residents and enhancing the local economy by promoting it as a tourism destination. Thank you very much. And would any of you like to say something, or?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. First of all, thank you all very much. On behalf of President Rochon, we're very appreciative of this recognition. But we also wanted just to underscore that it would not have been possible without the cooperation of the entire community. It was truly a community partnership from the Ithaca Airport to TCAT to the downtown. I mean, it was an entire community that came together in support of inviting 3,500 guests to our community. So thank you all for that as well.
I'd like to thank the county also for affording the opportunity for the lacrosse tournament to be run here. Who would have thought that in November in central New York you could play outside? We've done it in snow, and we've done it in rain, and we've done it in nor'easters, and we've done it everywhere. There were 2 years that we moved up to Rochester because the high school was under construction when we put in the turf field, and we moved up to Rochester. And I received a lot of complaints from my people. They love Ithaca. Aww. They love Ithaca, so we brought it back as soon as the turf field was done, and we're back home. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pam. Thank you to everyone. And thank you, Tom, for these nominations. All right, we can move to, I want to, all right, in terms of reordering of business, I will take the piece of unfinished business that we have, which is the election of vice chair, and move it to the front of the meeting. I think first I'd like to have our public privilege of the floor and report from our municipal official who's here. So, but first, let's go to public privilege. Is there anyone who'd like to address the legislature? All right, Herb, you're up. Welcome, and it's great to have a report from a municipal official again, especially twice in this year so far.
Well, thank you. The first time I was here this year, I tried to emphasize a little bit the interaction of the county and the town of Ithaca. Tonight, I'd like to talk about just two different things. One is one challenge that I think the town of Ithaca is going to be facing this year, which will sound very familiar to all of you, and that is, I think, the 2013 budget, which we've already started working on, will be probably the toughest in anybody's memory. We have done absolutely everything we can think of. We've reduced our workforce 5%. We've done all the efficiencies we can think of. We've raised all the money we can think of, including dramatically raising fees and taxes the past few years. We still can't keep pace with the rise in health care costs and pensions. We just can't. We can't keep up with it. So it's going to be a real tough year in 2013, I think. And we certainly see no relief coming from the state in terms of unfunded mandate relief and the lack of monies for projects from both the state and federal levels, which we usually partner with in order to get things done in infrastructure. It's just dried up. It's not there anymore. So it's going to be a tough year for us. On the other hand, we do have actually some good news in terms of commercial development in the town of Ithaca. And that's unusual. We don't have a lot of commercial in the town. But as we meet here, Ithaca Beer is expanding their facility. When they're done, they will have the capacity to make three times as much beer as they did before. But in addition, on their 80 acres of land, they are going to build a restaurant and a beer garden and a proper tasting parlor. So it'll be a real destination, I think, for people. We were talking about tourism a little earlier. I think this is something tourists will come, just as they do on the wine trail. They'll make this a stop on the beer trail. So we're really looking forward to that. And the owner is going to try to grow some hops on some of those 80 acres to use in the beer-making process. Next door at the old Bell's Grocery, there is a proposed biodiesel processing plant. And this is still under review, and it will take some careful consideration. But it does kind of fit in with our comprehensive plan thoughts for the Inlet Valley. We'd like to see the Inlet Valley, that is south of Buttermilk Falls State Park, become really an agribusiness area. And Ithaca Beer, the biodiesel, the roadside stands we already have there, the agritourism we have there a little bit with a corn maze and some other things. We'd really like to push that in the Inlet Valley area. The other commercial development is a new restaurant at the East Hill Plaza, the empty restaurant that's been across from where the old bowling alley used to be on Pine Tree Road. That has been expanded, made larger, so we're hoping that it will have a better chance of success over time because it'll be a bigger facility. We never let up in terms of housing. The demand is just amazing. On West Hill, you may have read in the Ithaca Journal, the senior housing is progressing there, 72 units of rental. And we have been working very closely with Conifer Corporation to reorient the project to be more a part of the neighborhood rather than just a development. Again, that's one of the comprehensive plan approaches that we're taking. We want to build neighborhoods from now on, not just housing developments or senior developments. We want everything to be oriented toward neighborhoods. So that one is going along fairly quickly now, at least. On South Hill, Longview is expanding, creating 22 senior rental housing units. And the idea is that those senior citizens who are more mobile will live in these units. And then as they age, if they want to move into the Longview more intensive care, they can do so right next door. Just up the or down the road or south of Longview is Holly Creek. These will be 22 low-income ownership houses. The Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services is developing that. And then on East Hill, we have Bell Sherman, which is our first attempt to increase density in an infill project. There'll be 32 home ownership on that property, which is a very small property, so it'll be quite dense. And if you drive by there, it's a little remarkable to think about 32 housing units fitting in there. So that's going to be a challenge, and it'll be very interesting to see how that turns out. So lots of activity. I didn't mention other housing proposals that are on the drawing board and aren't nearly as advanced as these. That's about 500 more units in the town of Ithaca. So we just have immense housing pressure and are looking forward to other communities that are talking about housing developments to take some of the pressure off the town of Ithaca. Finally, I wanted to thank you for having on your agenda tonight the resolution of support for the Metropolitan Planning Organization, which in Tompkins County is the ITCTC. As the chair of the policy body of the ITCTC, I do appreciate your considering this, and I do hope you'll support it because it's been wonderfully successful locally. And if things happen as they might at the federal level, communities like ours may not have a local MPO anymore, and we'd simply be facilitated by the state, and we wouldn't have anything to say about it. And those of us who have served on the ITCTC know that it's a very collaborative approach, and we work very well as a total community on those matters. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Herb. Thank you very much for being here. Will?
Thank you, Martha. And thanks, Herb, for that very good report. I, too, have been thrilled to see the construction of the new Ithaca Beer facility. It is in my district, and, in fact, it's walkable from my neighborhood, and I look forward to walking down and enjoying a cold one.
And especially walking back, right?
Walking back. If I'm not mistaken, in a few weeks you'll be going. You or some of the members of the board will be going down to New York to the Association of Towns meeting and our conference. And I encourage you to try to find other to link up with other towns and see if there's any way to push back against our state around these mandates that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. It's just extraordinary, and. Several of us just come back from the New York State Association of Councils of Counties meeting, and we have yet to actually, I think, coalesce a group that can successfully make the case that the mandates are killing us. But I hope that can happen at the level of towns and counties, of course.
Yeah, I hope so, too. Normally, the governor and the attorney general, the controller, our national senators all show up for this. Whether they will this year or not, I don't know. But if we have a chance to have input, certainly we want to talk not only about those issues, but also about the tax cap, which we at least think is ill-advised, and for and gas drilling. We think especially... Our senators need to start understanding better what the challenge is for New York State, and of course the governor needs to hear that also. So yeah, there's some big issues that we need to grab some lapels if we can while we're in New York City.
Thank you.
Any other questions after Peter?
Yeah, Herb. It was always my impression that mandates are a much greater part of the budget of the county than they are of towns. What are the largest mandated areas in terms of dollars? I'm not asking what the dollars are, but just what are the functions that are the largest functions that are mandated?
Yeah, good question. Code enforcement, I would say, is the biggest. Towns are obligated to carry out the code enforcement for the state of New York. We don't receive any money for that, so we have to tax for it. Beyond that, stormwater management, which was a very, very recent mandate, our staff estimates that that's costing us about $70,000 a year. Again, absolutely no state money comes with that. Some of the others are dog control. We are obligated to provide for dog control with no money from the state. The most recent, believe it or not, is fireworks. The state used to license part of fireworks, private displays, and localities did public. The state just decided last year they were getting out of the business, and they said, you do it. So now we have to license and inspect both private and public fireworks displays. It doesn't sound like much, but most displays are on the weekend. So we have to bring in a code enforcement officer on the weekend and pay overtime in order to license and to inspect these activities. So those are just some of the things that we're obligated to do. Fire protection is another one. About half of the property tax that the town of Ithaca levies goes to pay one bill That bill is to the Ithaca Fire Department, and it's for fire protection. It's $3.1 million a year. It's killing us. And we're going to have to find other ways to provide fire protection because we can't afford that rate of money anymore. It's just huge. Over half of our property tax is going for that one bill. So these are some of the challenges we're facing. But the state says you shall provide fire protection, and one way or another, we have to provide it.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Herb? Herb, you mentioned, I have a question. You mentioned 500 more units of housing. Did you mean in the projects that are right now being constructed or the other ones you didn't even mention yet?
No, those are the ones I didn't mention. Those are ones that have been brought to the town, discussed, but aren't far enough along to know that they're really going to happen. These other ones I think will happen. The 500 units, well, quite frankly, the 106-unit unit on West Hill probably will happen. It's been in the process now for actually several years. So that one will probably happen. Another very large one of 400 units is still active. I mean, they're still bringing in materials and so forth, but just doesn't look like it's funded yet, and therefore we're not positive it's going to happen, but it probably will.
And the number for the projects that you listed that are going to happen? Do you know what the total number is?
No, the ones that are going to happen. I think the total is
104, 126, 100,
and...
Give or take.
About 152.
Okay. That's great. Okay.
Yeah. So there's... just a lot of, I didn't even mention the smaller ones. There's 8 here, 16 there. Mm-hmm. Those are small projects for us. And it's just the pressure. And that's why I've been so happy to hear the city of Ithaca is going to have a considerable number of units going up in the next couple of years. And that may help take the pressure off. One of the things I've talked with Savante Merrick about, of course, is Emerson. If we can get some good housing in Emerson as part of the package, that would be wonderful because it'll take the pressure off the rest of the area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, Herb. All right. If I could ask us then to go to unfinished business, I'd like to entertain a motion to remove from the table the election of vice chair of the Tompkins County Legislature. Will moves. Peter seconds. All right, any discussion? All in favor of that motion, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's one opposed, so that's...
I'd like to say that because I'd rather we do it in the order it's on the agenda.
Okay, thank you. So that's 14 to 1. So I will remind us that we have 5 names in nomination right now. Jim Dennis, Will Burbank, Peter Stein, Frank Proto, and Kathy Luz Herrera. So just in case we left anybody out, I wonder if there's is there any interest in reopening nominations? Mike?
I'd like to move to reopen nominations.
Is there a second? Pam seconds that. Any discussion? All in favor of reopening nominations, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? That's unanimous. All right. So are there any new nominations? Mike?
I would like to nominate Pam McAsey for vice chair of the legislature. I've been happy to serve with Pam for the last 2 years on the legislature. I've known her much longer than that, particularly when she was a member of Ithaca City Council. I've been very taken with the way she has applied herself to her duties here at the county. And at the same time, I think she made us proud by her efforts in the senatorial race to bring a breath of fresh air to a rather conservative district, to talk about issues in the area west of Tompkins County, whether it was environment, fracking, the issues of poverty and the need to help people. I think, although she wasn't successful in that race, I think she did good for us and all of us, and I think that was a real effort. And I think, listening to her talk about it, that it was an eye-opener for her and a learning experience for her. And that's what it should be. Also, she made a valiant effort to run for mayor last year in a primary, and that's never easy to do that. On the legislature itself, she's been the chair of our Planning and Economic Development Committee. She's shepherded through that committee some of the important resolutions we've had regarding hydrofracking and the environment, the sustainability issues. I think that's pretty important. And when she chaired the Census Committee, she made a real effort to make sure that we had people counted, took it to College Town and other places to try to get all of those people that lived in Tompkins County and were here on Census Day counted. I think she will bring a good perspective to the position. I think she will be willing to work with the chair and the rest of us, and I think she would make an excellent vice chair, and because of that, I'm bringing her name forward.
Thank you, Mike. Is there a second? Dooley seconds nomination.
Well, now that we have Pam back from her exhausting campaigns, and she can give her rejuvenated energy, I hope, full time to the legislature, I'm happy to second this nomination.
All right. Thank you. Are there any other nominations? Will.
Thank you, Martha. As you know, several of us were previously nominated, and presumably you gave us an opportunity to withdraw. I was one of those, and I will be removing my name, as thrilling as it was to be in the mix. But I am pleased that I was pleased to learn that one of our colleagues was willing to step forward and be considered. And I'm talking, of course, about Nathan Shinagawa, who I am nominating to be our vice chair. We all know Nathan. He's a man of extraordinary energy and intelligence. I've had the pleasure of working with him not only in this setting, but also as a member of the IDA and the Health and Human Services Committee. And I can tell you that whenever Nathan's in a room, his mind is just going warp speed, and he's frequently bringing elements to the discussion that are interesting and useful. And just one example I'd like to recall from several years ago, when we were, this was when we had one of our budget meetings out at the transit building, and we were all sort of trying to come to terms with these numbers. Nathan pulled out his iPhone or whatever and was developing a chart based on the numbers he was getting, and was realizing that we had a problem in terms of the spend down of our funding balance. He had figured out using the technology just to quickly inform us in a way that I was deeply impressed. Nathan is somebody who knows how to take different positions and push them and disagree without being disagreeable, and I think that's a quality sorely needed. I know that he's deeply committed with many things, and one of my concerns early on was that he might not have enough time to actually give to this job, but talking with him, he has assured me that, I guess, due to some changes that in his other responsibilities, he would be willing and committed to making this happen, and I think he would bring great added value to the meetings that Martha and Joe have in terms of looking at the whole range of things that we're dealing with and the administrative challenges. So I'm delighted to put his name in nomination.
Thank you, Will. Is there a second? Pat.
Yes, it's a pleasure for me to second Will's nomination of Nathan for vice chair. And I would like to concur with the comments that Will has made. The thing that I have noticed about working with Nathan here on the legislature is that he seems to be able to work well with people, with everybody, with all different people, with different points of view, even with people that he disagrees with. He seems to have good working relationships. I think he prefers to find areas of commonality rather than to focus on finding ways that we can compromise rather than simply looking at our differences. And I think that that's a really important quality to me, and I think it's one that benefits us all. The other thing I'd like to point out is that for Nathan to come into a position of leadership here in the county would bring the perspective of a young member of the legislature, which I think is good. We have so many younger people in our community who are just beginning to get interested in politics and moving into this whole arena, and I think that that's important to have that perspective represented in our county leadership. And the other thing is that Nathan is a person of color. We don't have any person of color in from the legislature that's in the leadership of the county, and I think that that's an important aspect that he would bring to this position. So I'm happy to second his nomination.
Thank you, Pat. Are there any other nominations? At this point, would anyone like to withdraw? Will, are you formally withdrawn? Jim?
Yes, Martha, I would like to withdraw my name at this point for the position of vice chair.
All right. Peter?
Me too.
Peter's shortest speech ever. Anyone else? So I believe we have the nominations of Frank, Kathy Luce, Pam, and Nathan. So in that order, I will, are we ready to vote? Brian? I'm sorry, that's right, of course. Leslie?
Nominations be closed.
A motion, and Brian?
As is customary for me, I would like to hear briefly from each of the candidates.
Hold on. So are you seconding the closing of the nominations?
Yes.
Okay, because we could hear from the candidates after we vote on that, I think. All right, so that's the motion on the table, to close nominations. All right, any discussion? All in favor of closing nominations, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Okay, Brian, go ahead.
Thanks. I would like to again, it's been a little while since we've visited this topic, and things have changed, obviously, and time has gone by. And I would like to ask each of them to briefly just state what they view their role as the vice chair of being, any goals they might have, and what their unique characteristics would be to that position, if I may.
Absolutely. Frank, you being the first one.
Well, I think probably the most unique characteristic that I would bring to this position is this board has consistently prided itself on bipartisanship, and of any of the names that are in contention, I think that I would certainly fulfill the role of bipartisanship. I think Martha and I, while we spar occasionally, I think we complement each other relatively well. I try to be thoughtful and well-informed, and I try to keep you informed. I'm not presuming that this position, as I said the last time when we did this, this is not a co-chairmanship. This is simply a position where one would act in the event that the chair was not able to act for whatever reason. And some of us, well, I certainly have been in that position before on this board. It's important to make sure that you're consistent with the wishes of the chair, even though there may be an opportunity to present an alternate opinion. I think it's wise to make sure that you're working well together. And I think that working with staff is very important. I don't think the vice chair in this particular instance should have any prescribed goals. It shouldn't be used as a position to usurp any authority, certainly, because you don't have any. You simply are acting in the stead of the chair. I have the time, and I certainly have the interest, and I think trying to work well with each of you is important. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
You bet.
Kathy Luce.
Thank you. I was really thrilled when I heard that Leslin had nominated me, and I guess Pam had seconded, even though things have changed. That got me here to have a chance to tell y'all what I would bring. Nobody will deny that I have a thick skin, that I'm willing to be a lightning rod, that I have no problem taking a stand. As a matter of fact, many of you around this table have brought issues to me that you hoped I would carry forth, and I have. One of the things that I think a vice chair is supposed to do is serve as a backstop for the chair, support the chair in ways that they may not always have the abilities or the focus or the time to do. In the past, one of the things that the vice chair did was, for example, do ceremonial things. If I was elected as vice chair, I would do that. Probably not with as much enthusiasm as some of the rest of you. The way that I see a role for me as vice chair, without any huge goals or desire for power or future leveraging of this on my resume or somewhere else, would be to show that we're willing to really walk the talk around collaboration, that people that have differences of opinion from time to time, but who tend to vote very similarly most of the time, can get together and can move an agenda that's for the good of the county and can do it in a way that takes into account a broad range of opinions. And I don't think anyone around the table would argue with the fact that we legislators, the 15 of us, encompass a broad range of opinions. I can tell you that I would be open to hearing from any and all of you, and that I would be willing to work with Martha on this. The other part that I bring to this, besides being a person of color, being openly gay, and being well-worn and weathered by the effects of being very adamant about the fact that those attributes of mine are part of my identity that I get to bring to the table and to my work and to my interactions every day. It's not something that I leave at home or in another arena. The impact of race and of my sexual orientation on my life is something that affects every minute of my day, and I'm happy to share that with people. But the other part of it that I think that would be beneficial to everybody here is the fact that as someone from the outside, I also have chosen in running for elected office to be on the inside. And being a city resident, I'm a strong advocate for city interests on the county legislature. I think it's really important, and in these interesting times when we have people fleeing the city for various reasons, I think it's all the more important, especially when we have a new mayor who's looking at smart growth and who's working with some dedicated and very intelligent people to find ways to bring growth to the downtown core. I think that I could be a conduit, and that I'm a person that has no problem disagreeing. I also have no problem in talking with people that I may disagree with and who may disagree with me, and in saying things that may make people uncomfortable. Now, I know that sometimes people think that saying something that makes people uncomfortable is being disagreeable. I disagree with that, and as you can tell, it's something that sometimes does make me a lightning rod. I think that's a good thing to have, and as a matter of fact, I think there's a way that would serve as a foil for Martha, and there's a way that people seeing the two of us cooperating together and leading the legislature would take us forward in areas not just of compromise, but in leading this county through some very troubled times that we've had in the past, but that we have to move forward through to the future. So show your faith in growth and compromise, and consider that even though I'm a Democrat, I've got the guts to stand up and say when I think something is wrong, and that is a good thing, and that is something that we need on the county legislature, regardless of political party, and that I would be a very good second to Martha's chair. And that's why I want to run, and I would really respectfully ask for y'all to consider supporting me and see what will happen. I think it will all be good, and I want to show you.
Thank you, Kathy. Pam?
Well, I am running for vice chair
because I think that I would be a good vice chair. I think that I have shown through my life and my work that I work well with many different kinds of people. Being a labor organizer, you are thrust out into the community, and you have to deal with all different kinds of people. Being the daughter of a minister who moved from every 6 years, as was the want of the church that my father was the minister of, I had to meet and get to know and adapt to different situations. So it's something that I feel very comfortable with. I think that the chair is clearly the person who sets the goals and makes the determination of the role of the vice chair and at what level the vice chair participates. I know that historically there have been vice chairs who have done nothing, who have been asked to do nothing. I would hope that Martha would call on me to help her. I think that what I would bring is I would see myself, besides doing the kinds of things that she wants me to do, I would see myself as her eyes and ears, is that of trying to understand what the issues are among legislators, and in our community, and I think that that I could be a real help to her. I also think that it's important to have somebody who is vice chair who has the time to understand the issues at a level where if Martha is away or there's some way that the vice chair has to step up for a while, that I would have the time to work on the issues and educate myself enough so that would be an easy transition for me. But I think that I really feel as if this is a point at which we all need to be drawn together and work together as a legislature, as a county. I think there we are on our own in terms of our state and our federal government, and I think it's just incredibly important that we all be working together to survive and to make our county thrive. So I think I bring many, many strong characteristics to vice chair, and I hope that you will support me. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. Nathan?
Yes, thank you very much. Brian, to recap, you had three things that you wanted me to go over: role of vice chair, goals, and characteristics that I bring to the table. Is that right? Yeah, okay. So in terms of the role of the vice chair, I mean, other than the things that are defined inside of our charter, I think really the role of the vice chair is to be both someone who contrasts with the chair and complements the chair, that helps accentuate that chair's strengths, but also is helps constructively work with the chair when she needs areas in which to improve and perspectives that she needs to have. So I think that's the role of the vice chair. In terms of goals, my goals, yeah, I believe that yeah, there shouldn't be specific, I'm not going to have specific issue goals for vice chair. What I wanted, my goals, though, are for me to bring a different way of thinking into the senior level discussions that will happen, that happen between the chair and the vice chair and the county administrator in meetings. And so, you know, part of that is we're going to have a tough budget year, so I want us to start thinking strategically very early on. This is something, an area, being an administrator like Joe is, that's basically what I do at my hospital. And so I'm constantly working on budgets, on complicated HR issues, on managing contracts and other agreements. And so I think I could bring that voice to early on. Also, one of my goals is for us to rely on the experts in this body, the experts on this body, and also rely on people's strengths. And this is a big thing because, you know, I know, understand we're a body of equals, but there are different strengths that each one of us has. You know, and so I want us to, for example, when we're talking about agriculture issues, you know, and finance issues, you know, that we rely on Frank. You know, that we have when it's a legal issue, that we rely on Mike's special expertise. When it's on youth programs and education, that we rely on Leslin's expertise. You know, and then when it's the environment, that we rely on Dooley. And with Carol, especially in this past year, you know, she's shown that she has a real expertise on fracking. And, you know, to rely on her expertise, too. I think that we could do that more, and I would encourage that as vice chair. And then finally, with my characteristics, I think I could disagree without being disagreeable. That's a big one for me. I want to show respect. When I decided to do this, I let every one of you know. I left voicemail messages on your phone if I couldn't get to you, right? But I let every one of you know about it. And then also, you know, Mike had a request that we bring this forward publicly. And I did exactly that and communicate with the press, just a one-sentence email that said, I want you to know that I'm running for vice chair. You know, I want to be respectful of all of you. And then finally, one of my characteristics is that I've learned to really respect process. I wasn't that guy 4 years ago, but I think that I've got to the point where I do really respect process, while at the same time keeping my characteristic of focusing on also getting the job done. And so with that, that's what I think I bring to vice chair, and I hope that I can have your support tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Nathan. I want to thank Brian for bringing the questions forward. I think it's definitely improved our process here. Is there any other discussion or other questions for the candidates? All right, then we'll vote in the order in which people were nominated. That would be Frank, Kathy, Lewis, Payman, and Nathan. You only get one vote. All in favor of... I'm sorry?
One vote from each hand.
Now, then we'd need 16 to be able to win. Okay. So all in support of Frank Proto for vice chair, please raise your hand. Okay. That's 3. All in favor of Kathy Luz Herrera, please raise your hand.
Aye.
I see 2. In favor of Pam Maxey, please raise your hand. I see 3. In favor of Nathan Shinagawa, please raise your hand. 7. Okay. Since we need 8 to take any action.
Did you check that they added up?
Yes.
Give it, Peter.
3, 2, 3, and 7 is 15. Is that right, David? Okay. And I think we want to. I know Carol is here against medical advice, so I think we'd like to try to wrap this up. If there's any other discussion, ready to vote again? All right, we'll go through in the same order. All in support of Frank Proto, please raise your hand. 3. All in favor of Kathy Luz Herrera, please raise your hand. 2. Pam Maxey. 3. That would be 3. Nathan Shinagawa. 7. 7. I don't see any movement there. All right. Anybody interested in withdrawing? Any new nominations for which we would open the floor? All right, let's vote one more time. All in favor of Frank Proto, please raise your hand. 3. Kathy Luz Herrera. 2. Pam Maxey. 3. Nathan Shinagawa. 7. Okay. Frank?
Madam Chair, could I suggest that we table this until the last order of business and proceed with the rest of the agenda?
A motion to table until later in the meeting, the last part of the meeting. Is there a second for that? Kathy Luce seconded that. Carol, how you doing?
I would prefer to do this now and see how long I can last. Sure, exactly what's going on. I did not want to leave you all not voting. So I would...
Point of order, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, Carol's talking, Peter. Go ahead. Carol, finish. Were you finished?
No, the point of order is being raised about whether I have the right to speak.
I asked you to speak,
point. And if this is not tabled at this point, then I would ask to be put on the order of speaking or content-wise.
Okay. Peter?
That was the point of order I was about to make.
Okay. Then we need to vote on motion to table to the end of the meeting. All in favor of that motion, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I had 5 to 9. Did somebody not vote?
I didn't vote because I didn't even hear the question.
The vote? Okay. Well, at least I didn't count wrong. The motion was to table the election of vice chair to the end of the meeting. Let's do that vote again since we didn't have everybody vote. All in favor of tabling until the end of the meeting, please raise your hand. 3, 4, 5, 6. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That fails 6 to 9. Carol.
Yeah, I made a special effort to be here tonight, although I am feeling quite under the weather, nothing contagious. I think I'll be okay. Some of you saw me at 8:30 this morning, and since then I developed something. I don't know exactly what it is. And I'm not sure if I'll go home from here or to the hospital. So I'm hoping we can just do this. We'll have to do it eventually. I do want to say that when I had to miss the meeting where we were really at odds, you guys were really at odds over the chair vote, it didn't quite make sense to me that our body chose to go into vote after vote after vote without making an attempt to convince our peers, take a stand, maybe take a recess. I need to take a break at some point, and I will go do that. But I had a hard time with what to do about the vice chair, as I did with chair. And, you know, Nathan and I don't always see eye to eye. We didn't always see eye to eye in the primary that you were involved with in the city. But I do think that one of the most important things to me is that we get to move past the contention that we've had lately. And I do see Nathan as somebody who makes the effort, particularly if you're making changes with your other hours and when you are aware that maybe you'd like to talk about. I do see him as somebody. So what finally made the decision for me that I would appeal to my peers to move us forward, to have some movement around the notion of working with and towards a compromise. And I think that of the candidates, Nathan, for me, does that. So I would hope that we could maybe take a break at some point and talk among ourselves, and I won't move for that yet, but at some point I might. And I would encourage my colleagues to pipe up, because we can't just keep voting over and over with no movement. There can't be, you know, five chairs, vice chairs.
Mike and then Peter.
I just think taking a break and going out in the hall and making private conversations is the wrong way to approach this. I think we should discuss it here on the floor.
Peter?
Well, I half agree with Mike. I don't see anything that we could accomplish by going out of the room and having a private discussion. I also don't think there's anything we could accomplish by having a public discussion. I may be wrong about that. But I think that we all know what the issue is. We all know what the votes are. We all know all the information there is to know. And we also all know that we can't stay here forever. And so I think that we just simply ought to keep doing this until somebody realizes that we have to get out of this some way by their own action, and that person then will do the action that gets us out of this. So I would suggest, I remember Jonathan told us when we were voting for chair that there had been a record of, I think, 137 ballots that had been taken once for chair of the committee. And I think we ought to strive for that and hopefully not quite make it.
Peter, I'm pretty sure that weren't for the same set of candidates each of those times. So that might be one of the issues. All right. Mike?
Well, as long as those who are hoping that somebody else will change and vote for their candidate isn't, you know, maybe somebody ought to say we should change and step forward and offer the change.
Well, I tell you what, I'd like to entertain a motion to table until after my report and let people incubate a little bit and just, you know, take a breath and then try again in a few minutes.
I'll submit.
Is there a second? Thank you, Peter. That's been moved and seconded to table until after legislative privilege of the floor and the chair's report. All in favor of moving to postpone until that point? Please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Do it again.
I have to call for the opposition.
Did you get it up? Did you see all the hands?
I think I did. Okay. All right. All in favor of postponing until after my report, please raise your hand again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Opposed. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That fails. 7 to 8. Should we do another ballot? Okay, we're going to go another round. Those in favor of Frank Proto, please raise your hand. 3. Those in favor of Kathy Luz Herrera, please raise your hand. 2. Those in favor of Pam Maxey, please raise your hand. 3. Those in favor of Nathan Shinagawa. 7. All right. Any other ideas? Brian.
Can I just make an observation? We've had the same vote every time. And at some point, one or more of the candidates would have to make a move, I would think. That's just an observation.
That's a good observation.
Okay. I hate to state the obvious, but
should I read Gail's poem again?
Not to a bunch of trees.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's a trees.
How about a motion to postpone until after legislative privilege of the floor? We'll just put it off, 10 minutes. How about that?
I'll move that.
All right, is there a second? Seconded by Dooley. All in favor of postponing until after legislative privilege of the floor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? That passes 11 to 4. All right. All right, take a breath. Shake it off. Legislative privilege of the floor. Anyone? Carol, hang in there. Jim, then Pat.
Thank you. Last Saturday, I attended the opening of the BJ store and at the mall, and I only mentioned that because I was the person who carried the member file to the legislature and barely got it through. And I wanted to see what was going on up there. We were all indicted, I think, and it was a very interesting morning, and the place was just completely packed. And there were a lot of observers in the sense they were looking to see what kind of place it was. And I was there with my wife, and we walked around and purchased some minor things. And while I was doing that, I started asking people why they were there, where were they from, and things like that. And it was very interesting to find out the people that I ran into, I was just making random choices. People were from Groton, people from Cortland County, people from north of Tompkins County. And I said, why are you down here? Well, we're down here because it's closer than the one we would go to in Auburn and some of the others in the Syracuse area. So it became very interesting to me as I was looking at that people and watching them and finding out what their reason was. And I know that the legislature had, you know, we had great pains about whether or not we would support another big box store. But I think that place fills a need in the community for people who can buy things that they need at a really reduced price and are able to get things without driving out of the county, in effect. So I'm completely satisfied that what I did was the right thing then, and I continue to feel that way. And I think they are going to be a really welcome addition to the county because they had several community partnerships that they announced and gave away, not only money, but other things to well-recognized organizations in the county.
Thank you, Jim. Pat.
Thank you, Martha. I just wanted to point out that the county, through the IDA, has been in negotiations with the AES Cayuga plant in Lansing, and those negotiations have now resulted in an agreement that will be voted on by the IDA. And in preparation for that vote, we held a successful public meeting in Lansing on Monday evening. And there will be another meeting on Wednesday at 7 o'clock at the Town Hall in Lansing, which will be the public hearing that's required before the IDA vote. That is open to anyone who would like to go and submit comments to the IDA regarding the negotiations with AES Cayuga. So I just wanted to make sure that you all knew about that. Also, I wanted to mention that on Thursday evening, the 9th, at 7 o'clock at All Saints Church in Lansing, which you go down the hill and it's right across from the high school, there will be a meeting on gas drilling and legal options for communities looking at the issues surrounding gas drilling. That, too, is open to the public, and anyone is welcome to attend.
Thank you, Pat. Frank.
Thanks, Madam Chair. A couple of announcements. First, under Consumer Report, check your phone bill. Your universal fund fee went up again. Those of us that have Frontier Communications, it's now 17% of your bill. And we'll be doing a little bit of pencil and paperwork. I've got to draw Karen into it again. My intention is to find out exactly what the phone company, I know what they're collecting it for, and you get the standard answer if you call them as to what the fund is for. But it'd be interesting to actually see what they are using the money for. And I intend to follow that up with the phone company that supplies me. But I'd encourage you to check your phone bills because it's going to become even more contentious, I'm afraid. A couple of pleasant reminders. You know that this is Black History Month, but also we have, in addition to that celebration all month, we have two presidential birthdays this month, Lincoln and Washington. And we have another birthday, and I'm sorry that Brett and our poet laureate left, but today is Charles Dickens' birthday. And those of you that are fans probably will want to rush home and read one of the works that he wrote. Just a reminder. Some of us still read books, by the way. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Sorry, Frank. Until somebody switches a vote or drops out, there's no rushing anywhere. So, Leslie, and then Nathan, and then Julie.
Thank you, Frank, for reminding us all that it is Black History Month, and I encourage all of you, I'm sorry you don't have dates for a number of things that have been happening that are going to be happening in our community, but I do encourage all of you to please pay attention to emails and announcements. There is an exhibit I think it's Waiting for Timbuktu, I don't remember where. It's at the state theater. I don't remember the date. So pay attention to that. There are a number of activities happening in our community. And in typical Luslin Black History form, I want to make sure that you get your token of our Black History appreciation. This year I chose to bring you some bookmarks of that wonderful book you will be reading about Black life, Black culture, and Black history. And this bookmark features Barbara Jordan, who, as we all know, was a very effective congresswoman, as also a senator in Texas. So here is your Black history token. Sorry, Brian, I shouldn't be hitting police officers.
I feel like I'm home.
So please, as much as possible, try to get out to the events that are occurring in our community. One I will mention to you that I know is happening is next Friday, the 17th. February 17th is the annual Community Black History Month talent show at GIAC, beginning at 6:30 in the evening. So please come and support our community members. Just an evening of cultural sharing. It's GIAC's 40th anniversary, and we are celebrating everything as if we are 40. So feel free to join us for the Black History Talent Show on Friday the 17th. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Do you want to talk about Sister Friends? Because tickets will go on sale soon.
I want you to do that because I don't know what's going on.
Okay. All right. When it comes to my turn, I've got Nathan, Dooley, Will, and then Mike.
Oh, yes. Carol put me on the spot a little bit. And so I'm and this is kind of all I'm going to do. I'm not going to actually campaign or anything like that. I just want to simply let you know. So that I'm going to part-time status. I'm actually in part-time status in my work, and I'll be going on full leave to consider running for Congress. And so I want all of you to know that, so that I could be upfront with all of you. I've let many of you know already, but I just want to put that out there. All right? Thanks.
Thank you, Nathan. Dooley, Will, Mike, and Leslie again.
Well, not only is this Dickens' 200th birthday, but there's another anniversary that's happening today. It's the 50th anniversary of the full-spectrum U.S. embargo on Cuba. And that is something that embarrasses me every time I read about it, hear about it. It was lifted partially during President Carter's time in office. He allowed travel once again to Cuba. And then everything was closed up again. There's very limited travel now to Cuba, and no move to change the situation, even though our present president, before he was president, spoke about how it needed to end. So this is a sad day to remember, not as well as really a good day about Dickens. But you can't possibly rush home and read a whole Dickens book. They're too long in one day.
They're too big.
Will.
Thank you. As you may have heard, the city of Ithaca, at its last meeting, passed a resolution calling for an amendment to the U.S. Constitution to abolish corporate personhood. This is something that I mentioned, I think, at our last meeting, that I hope we will consider, which is the something to address this new force that is pumping millions and millions and millions into our election system without disclosure, and through the creation of these so-called super PACs, and all flowing from the Supreme Court decision of Citizens United that essentially and a previous decision that defined free speech and money as one and the same. At any rate, I think it's appropriate to go through a committee. I know we're in the process of forming committees, but I'm hoping that that government operations will consider something, and I'll be sending some ideas forth. Secondly, last week I had the interesting experience of going with Martha and Joe to the NYSEC conference. I'm sure that maybe that Martha and Joe will want to say something about their experience. I have to say, in some ways a disturbing experience because of what I was seeing of the enormous power that's being wielded currently by the government, by the governor, and how relatively weak the county legislatures feel in response. I went to one session where they talked about the tax cap. There are 62 counties in the state. 50 counties met that cap, and another 12 did not. Six sort of fell foul. They just literally passed budgets that exceeded the cap, but didn't vote to give themselves permission. 12 counties actually voted to override, and of that, half ended up staying within the limits of the tax cap. But what the takeaway message is that was this year. Where the real problem appears to be emerging is for next year, because what a lot of counties were doing that were staying within the tax cap, they were doing layoffs, attrition, salary freezes, hiring freezes, demotions, et cetera, but spending down the fund balance. And that is not sustainable. And once again, the frustrating thing to me was that I was not seeing yet a coalescence of counties trying to push back. And I think that still needs to come. And I'm very thankful for the strong voices of Joe and Martha who were pushing that, both at the conference but at some meetings afterwards. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Mike, then Leslin, Peter, and Nathan.
Leslin, thank you for this Barbara Jordan bookmark. I still remember listening to her on the Watergate, during the time of the Watergate affair, and on her committee, and she was one of my heroes at that time. I don't think anyone could send chills through your spine like she could when she pronounced the word Constitution and her wonderful way of doing that and her wonderful reasoning that she used. So I really appreciate that. But something else I wanted to talk about was the President's State of the Union address, and there were two themes in it that particularly I thought rang home here in Tompkins County, a county that is so tied to education as its primary industry. And that was, one, his discussion about increasing support for our community colleges and how they can be used to help people and how they can be used as a tool in economic development. And the other theme was trying to keep the costs for students down so that they could attend college. And I think even here in Tompkins County, we need to think about those two themes. I know Tompkins Cortland Community College would be very happy to try to bring on some new programs, such as the President is offering, but so far there hasn't been any money to do that. And it's going to take some money from the federal government in order to be able to move those kinds of things forward, those initiatives. We also know that the cost to our students at the community college has been going up. The old idea of having the students pay a third, the counties pay a third, and the state pay a third of the cost has gotten skewed so that the students are paying a much higher share than they should be, and the states and the counties are down. And I hope that this year we can take a look at the TC3 budget particularly and see how we can do better with our sister county, Cortland, to help our community college. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Leslin.
Julie, thank you for the mention of re-mentioning Frank's mention of Charles Dickens, because I forgot that I wanted to encourage folks that, you know, Charles Dickens might be too big a book to run home and read, but there is a book out called The Help, as well as a movie called The Help. And I do want to encourage all of you to take a look at it. Read the book or watch the movie. It's one of those movies that remind us of the lines that, those unfortunate lines that cause division between us, although we have so many similarities and we share some of the same issues and problems that we can help support each other in conquering and getting over. But we have these lines. So I encourage you all if Charles Dickens is not your cup of tea for a quick read, to please take time to read The Help. Or also, there's still the MLK Community Builds going on. We still have his book. Where do we go from here? Chaos or Community. I neglected to mention, I could not be here, I think it was last week, when City Council honored a gentleman in our community, Ken Glover, with the Julia Diane Sams Award, Black History Award, for his work and dedication in this community. And I wanted to, from this floor, say congratulations to Ken. Ken does amazing work in our community, very unassuming, not looking for kudos or praise of any kind, but works very hard with not just young African-American men and women in our community, with young men and women, period, in our community, encouraging them to go to school, encouraging them to stay in school, higher education. I remember during the mayoral race, Ken single-handedly, he would show up at my door every day like I was the Board of Elections or wherever he saw me, asking for voter registration forms, and will either walk down the commons or stop. He said, you know, here are places. It should be at a barbershop. It should be at a beauty salon. We should have these forms there to make sure that people were registering. I mean, literally stopping young people and saying, young man, are you registered to vote? You know, it's going to take you 2 seconds to do that. So he's very involved, very socially conscious, very, again, unassuming, but willing to do whatever it takes to help our young people advance and make right choices in this community. So Ken was very, very much befitting of this award, and I wanted to, like I said, from this floor, say a big congratulations to Ken for receiving that award from City Council.
Woohoo!
Thank you.
Thank you, Leslyn. Peter, then Nathan, then Brian.
I feel unhappy sitting in this room. I feel a little bit like Nero, fiddling while Rome burns. I feel a little bit like the Congress when they wouldn't pass the debt limit because neither side would compromise. Obviously, we're at a very much smaller scale than that, but on our scale, I think we're looking very silly. We have a decision we have to make. I don't think we should be diverted from that. And I've been sitting here and thinking about exactly what we could do. And I think we ought to keep voting until we come to a conclusion, or else we ought to hear from Jonathan what happens if we don't come to a conclusion. I'm not exactly sure what that is. But then I think that what we ought to do, as I say, is keep voting. And every so often, I disagree with what Mike says. I think there are things you can do in caucuses that you can't do in the open, that every so often, maybe after 5 votes, we break up and we break into caucuses about formed of the people who are voting for the 4 candidates, and let them talk and then come back again and vote again. And do that, not be distracted from that, but do that until we come to some kind of a conclusion as to what we're going to do. I think that's our primary business here, and we ought to focus on it and not be diverted from it.
Peter, I'm going to step in and say, I've never had any luck telling people what they have to do. So we're going to keep going. You know, starting with my kids, you know, that's where it starts. We're going to go through. We got Nathan, Brian, and Carol, and then we'll give it another try if there's no other privilege of the floor comment. So just hang in. We'll be right. Nathan.
I want to echo Leslyn's words about Ken. I actually saw him at the post office right before here, and he goes, what are you doing to preserve the social safety net? And I was like, let me tell you. I was just like, I mean, he's a fantastic guy. I also wanted to just be lighthearted and say that, you know, congratulations to the Giants for winning the Super Bowl. Woo! And also congratulations to Kevin Booth. He was a 2006 grad of Cornell, and he's the only Cornellian to win 2 Super Bowls, so awesome for him. He's a fantastic guy, too. And then also, I wanted to talk about I wanted to just say that the Clint Eastwood commercial on that during the Super Bowl was fantastic and incredibly moving. But then I also wanted to say that there was one Super Bowl ad that was really quite disgraceful. In Michigan, there's a guy running for Senate, Pete Hoekstra. He's a congressman right now, and he ran an ad that basically used an Asian American actor with broken English to basically attack his opponents for sending jobs away, you know, to foreign countries, et cetera. It was incredibly xenophobic and racist, and I'm glad that many conservative groups and other people on his side of the aisle are also condemning that ad. All right, that's all. Thanks.
Here. Thank you, Nathan. Brian.
Thanks. I have a couple things that are kind of public information. And the first one has to deal with this vote. First off, the sport in me kind of, you know, in a warped sense, kind of gets a kick out of this stuff.
It is warped.
Yeah. And then on the other side, I'm thinking this is somewhat embarrassing. I think it's embarrassing that here we are, almost the middle of February, and we don't have our leadership team together yet. But if you stop and think about it for a second, I really like the fact that we have so many people that are willing to step up and put themselves out for leadership roles. And it hasn't gone unnoticed to me that Pat and Dave and me are the only ones that haven't been nominated for anything. I'm sorry.
We're not done yet.
Right. And I guess I just want to tell the public that this too, we will come to a resolution. This too will pass, and that we know what's really important, and we know that we have a lot of important work to do, and we're going to get to it. And we're able to work together. It's not as divisive as it might appear, I don't believe. And we're going to be able to get to that. So just bear with us for a little bit. The second thing is pertains to an article that was forwarded to me via email the other day that was in a local publication having to do with the redistricting efforts, the independent redistricting efforts, and to somehow suggest that my changed vote in the chair's election somehow had something to do with me ending up with a little bit more of the town of Dryden. Now, I am glad to represent those folks from the town of Dryden. I can assure anybody that, did you hear the word independent? We do not have anything to do with that. That plan was formulated long before the vote for chair. And I did go, Mike was nice enough to host last week the first redistricting forum out in Dryden. It was very informative. Those folks have been working very hard for a year now at our request to get us to some sort of resolution there as well. And I'm very impressed with the effort that they've put forth so far. And I just felt I needed to say that. I thought that was just a very poor judgment journalistically. Just a question to any one of us certainly could have answered that, and it should not have been reported that way.
Good. Martha, could I just say, Brian, I agree with you, it was a great meeting out there, but it really was hosted by the town of Dryden and not me personally.
Okay.
It was in my district, though.
My mistake.
Thank you, Brian. I agree wholeheartedly with both of your comments. Okay, Carol and then Pat.
I was trying to second Peter's motion that we maybe consider having five votes and then a break. And my thinking there is not to do things in the back room, but if we have an unusual year that usually we know who the chair and the vice chair will be before we say what committees we want to be on. And, you know, Martha and the former vice chair.
Current
vice chair, yes. So, Dooley, maybe we should ask Jonathan if nothing happens tonight, can we just have Dooley continue?
I think she has to agree.
You know, that it's unusual for us not to have had that. And so we at some point we might want to consider that.
Pat and then Frank.
I want to thank you for the comments you made, Brian, and in regards to what you were saying about our process here in the legislature, that I am embarrassed, and I think that there probably are people out there watching tonight thinking, despite what you said about our getting the work done, which I agree, we will. We will come together and we will figure out a way to tackle the very important issues that we have before us this year. And I think we will do, as we have in the past, a very credible job of attacking those issues on behalf of the residents of Tompkins County. But at this moment in time, I am embarrassed. I don't know how this is going to turn out. I don't have any answer for what we should do next other than voting. I would also, the only other thing I would like to add is that I would hope for Carol's sake that we don't have to take too much longer. I can empathize with someone who doesn't feel well, but is it trying to do their duty despite that. So I'd like to see her be able to go home and go to bed.
Thank you, Pat. Frank.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was reminded by something that Leslin said about folks that need to be recognized for achievements, and while I'm promoting going home and reading Dickens, if you haven't had an opportunity, this is under the guise of Black History Month, if you haven't had the opportunity to see a particular movie called Red Tails, it is absolutely a phenomenal, we're not promoting war movies, by the way, but it's a true story. We have a local individual who was quite involved, Mike Hall, he was a former Air Force general and in charge of the air wing up at Syracuse. But it is a phenomenal movie about a group of black flyers that had to overcome a lot of adversity in World War II. If you want to see a moving movie, that is really a good one to see. The other thing I wanted to say is I was moved by what Brian said. And I think in order to avoid bruised egos, I'd like to nominate Dooley, Pat, David, Brian, Leslin, Carol, for whatever position they'd like to run. And if that gets seconded, then everybody will be on the table.
Thank you for mentioning Red Tails. An honor to be here.
Thank you, Madam. Trying to be a little light. And if you want to go for 5 votes, Peter, it's okay with me. If you bring that vote.
Kathy Lou.
Thank you. I'm glad y'all mentioned the meeting of the redistricting committees, the commission. The public meeting is what, tomorrow night? The one that's going to be in the city
Thursday.
Of Ithaca.
No,
is it tomorrow
Thursday,
night?
Thursday night.
Oh, I have it down for Wednesday night. Okay.
No, Thursday.
Thursday night, 8 o'clock. Did I have that part right?
No.
5:30.
Where am I going?
5:30 to 4:00.
No. Is this the county? You're talking about the county.
Yeah, at the
okay.
library.
The city actually has a redistricting committee meeting that is tomorrow. That's at 8 o'clock. That's at and I think that's of interest to those of us in the city that are, trying to think about what the impact might be of reducing to 4 wards, for example, 4 districts at the county level, and the perils, which I was quoted in that article in the Independent. I didn't agree with his conclusions, but I was quoted accurately as saying that I'm concerned there's some proportional representation issues. And Mike and I had the conversation the other day, and I think it's great that it is an independent commission and that they're meetings are completely open and transparent, and there's an opportunity for the public to weigh in. The city commission's meeting being, see if I got this right, city redistricting commission, and I believe it's at 8 o'clock. And I think it may be at the Tompkins County Public Library. I'll have to find out where it is.
City Hall.
Maybe City Hall? Thank you. But that's great for city and others who might want to come. And, of course, the one on Thursday. No, that's a different one. Okay, I'm going to stop now.
Dave.
I have a suggestion. I'm not sure if it's legal, so we'll let Jonathan make the decision. But anyway, if we could get all the candidates to agree, the one with the lowest number of votes in each vote would drop out until we have a winner.
Well, that's a suggestion. I'm just going to tap dance another minute and say, Sister Friends Luncheon, which we have every year, but this was on our sixth year?
Our eighth year.
Eighth year, whoa. Will be held Thursday, March 15th at Emerson Suites at Ithaca College, and our very own Rachel Lampert will be the keynote speaker, and with entertainment by some young women, and it should be a lot of fun. Tickets are going on sale in a couple days, right, Leslyn? At Multicultural Resource Center, and check with Audrey Cooper, and
at GIAC, but I don't know when it's going on sale.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Any other stalling tactics here? Okay.
Thinking tactics.
All right. Well, I will entertain a motion to remove from the table the election of vice chair. Moved by Carol, seconded by Peter. All in favor of that motion, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That is unanimous. So we are where we were. We have four candidates. Is there any debate or conversation? Frank.
Madam Chair, I think I'm moved by some of the comments that were made, and I certainly appreciate the support of Dave and Brian, but I think it's probably time. The probability, realistically, of being elected vice chair of this board is slim to none. And while I think a lot of us are capable of performing the task, I think I will, if it's not offensive to either of the two of you, I think I'll withdraw my name.
Thank you, Frank. And I agree with you that all the candidates, and in fact, anyone here could serve that position as well. Thank you. Any other discussion? Are we ready to vote again? Okay. Candidates are Kathy Luce Herrera, Pam Mackesy, and Nathan Shinagawa. All in favor of Kathy Luce, please raise your hand. I see two. In favor of Pam Mackesy, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five. I see five. In favor of Nathan Shinagawa, please raise your hand. One, two. 5, 6, 7, 8. David, does that add up?
Yes.
That adds up. Then Nathan Shinagawa is the 2012 vice chair of the Tompkins County Legislature.
Thank you all.
Thank you all. I had a feeling we'd get there.
And
I, in particular, need to extend my deep appreciation to Dooley for 2+ years of really wise and dedicated service as vice chair. You've set a new standard for what the vice chair ought to do and contribute to this body, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Okay. Kathy.
I've just been informed that the city redistricting committee meeting is tomorrow, Wednesday, February 8th, 8 p.m. in the City Hall second floor conference room. So I hope people will consider attending, look over the maps, discuss, and give input to the city's independent redistricting committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Leslyn?
Madam Chair, I want to just share real quickly with
with my colleagues. I've had the privilege and honor of having served as vice chair of this legislature under two chairs. And I've listened to people around the table talk about what, you know, the role of the vice chair is and or isn't and what one can and cannot do. And it can be as involved or as not involved as the chair would allow for the most part and as the vice chair would exercise strength and willingness to work. And so I don't know that there's some prescription of what it is, but there are times when I worked very hard as vice chair, very involved, and there were times under either chair that it was not as involved and was not as hardworking. So, Nathan, I congratulate you on your election to vice chair in hope that one of the things that I hoped, and I remember having this conversation with Mike, is that as vice chair, one would be as involved as possible in all of the goings-ons of the county and not just have it as a position title because there isn't that much, it's not that much defined about what it is that you are or aren't supposed to do. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you, Liz.
All right, I'd like to go to my report for 2012. In your packet, you will find committee lists and appointment lists. And these are not secret to anybody. You've all seen these. You've been helpful in providing comments and been part of putting these lists together. So let me just go through the plan for 2012. And I will say that I'm announcing these tonight, but we are holding with our 2011 committees until the end of business on February 16th. I have 30 days from being elected, from the day I was elected chair to appoint new committees, and I'm doing that so that we avoided some confusion in transition from one set of committees to the next. So there are a couple more meetings left to go, and we'll stay with that for with those until February 16th. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. I'm appointing Jim Dennis chair, Nathan Chinagawa vice chair, Brian Robison, Mike Lane, and Kathy Luce Herrera. Among the things that I know that the committee's looking at, in fact, maybe this week I already started that, the idea of just meeting once a month. There's critical times when votes have to happen. If something has to happen, Jim can always call a special meeting, but it seems once a month will probably be fine. For the Government Operations Committee, Dooley Kiefer will be chair, Pam Magasey vice chair, Pat Pryor, Mike Lane, and Peter Stein will make out the rest of the committee. For this year, the Information Technology Services Department should be a focus of your committee's work. We had an excellent retreat in January, and I hope your committee will organize how to follow through on that and really take our technology environment in the county to the next step. I would also like to ask you to reconsider putting mandate information on our property tax bills. Fulton County has led the way on that, and we've got information on that. I know your committee considered it last year. I'd really like that reconsidered. As Will suggested, corporate personhood should come to the GO committee this year. And there's a little thing called charter review, which Dooley and Mike especially will remember. We do every year, every 10 years. I believe after redistricting is done is something we might look at perhaps creating a special committee mid-year, but it's something that GEO should think about this year. For Health and Human Services, Frank Proto has been an able chair for a long time, and I would like to keep him there. Kathy Luce Herrera will be vice chair. Will Burbank Dennis, Jim Dennis, and Nathan Chinagawa will be the rest of the committee. In particular, I hope you'll keep an eye on state cuts to our nonprofit partners, to the agencies. We have early signals on the budget that may be a real point of vulnerability, and I hope you'll be able to support efforts where the agencies are working right now on sharing ideas about sharing space and back office functions as well. Planning Development and Environmental Quality Committee. Will Burbank will step up to be chair. Pam Accursey will be vice chair. Pat Pryor, Frank Proto, and Kathy Luce Herrera will be the rest of the committee. The focus this year, I hope, will be really on job creation and economic development. I think we haven't spent enough time on that as a body, and I know Michael Stamm is ready to work more closely with the committee on that. I've talked to Carl Haynes about bringing workforce program ideas to the committee, instead of solely the budget reporting that they do to the budget committee. I think TC3 will be eager to come to PDEC. And I'll be talking more about economic development later in my remarks. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Carol Chuck will be chair again. Dooley Kiefer, vice chair. Peter Stein, Leslie McBean Claiborne, and Dave McKenna will meet as a committee. There are a lot of tasks Carol's gotten started. Carol and the committee have gotten started this year, and I'm pleased she's agreed to continue those, especially settling on our leadership in the highway department and a communication plan for highways. We have talked about possibly different structure for F&I, perhaps longer meetings once a month, or even going to occasional second meetings to deal with your long agendas. Public safety. Peter Stein will chair that again. Brian Robinson will be vice chair. Jim Dennis, Leslie McBean Claiborne, and Dave McKenna will be the committee this year, with a particular interest this year on looking at our public safety building facility. We haven't looked at that facility in a while. We've been focusing on other capital needs, and I think it's time to review that building's needs and opportunities with the sheriff and with Arel Namaro, our facilities manager. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. I will appoint Leslie McBean Claiborne chair again. That was I go to the committee itself and sort of ask for their imprimatur on that. Kathy Luce Herrera, Nathan Shinagawa, and Pat Pryor will continue to serve. And I want to especially thank Joe for assigning Paul Younger to be an additional support to that committee this year. I think that'll be a great benefit. I appreciate your time on that, Paula. We're looking forward to hearing about the climate survey and the diversity plan working forward for this coming year. Two special committees, the Capital Plan Review Committee, which was, maybe should have been 1 year or 2 years. We're not done yet. So I'd like that committee to continue, but with Mike Lane as chair this year. I will be vice chair. The committee will include Dooley Kiefer, Frank Proto, and Carol Chalk, chair of facilities. I think that will be a good connection there. This is the year that COFA will move out of the courthouse. And it might be the year that we move out of the courthouse. So let's set a goal of trying to be in a different space, in our new space, a year from now. I really think the public will thank us when we get there. Once you've spent any time in that room, you'll realize how crowded this one is. So, and I also hope that this year the committee will be able to make a decision on the future location of the Community Justice Center and the fate of the old library. So that's a lot of work there. The Broadband Committee, chaired by Pat Pryor and Dave McKenna, will continue to march through the work that they've set out for themselves in their report that they gave to us last meeting. And members from the previous committee will be invited to serve again unless they indicate to Pat that they need to step off. So you'll update me on any of that, Pat. It'd be good to know by February 15th if there are any changes.
Okay.
To all of you, all the committees, I have a charge that you all will share. This is a time of, we've been talking about difficult budgets. We're talking about an economy that still hasn't moved. I mean, we have Joe and I and Frank were at the Economic Summit of the Chamber of Commerce, annual meeting of the Chamber of Commerce this morning at lunchtime. And there's some real dark clouds. We're not used to unemployment being in the 5.5% range in Tompkins County. I mean, we're used to being the lowest in the state, and we still are. But 5.5% is really not acceptable. So there are some real problems that we continue to face. So in terms of what we can do as a county government, I'd like every committee in your March meeting, so the first meeting of your committee, to spend a chunk of your time talking about whatever possibilities there might be for shared services among your responsibilities. Think deeply about this, if you would, and I'll ask Joe to send the message to staff as well. Let's try to think creatively, see where we might be able to partner with other municipalities, with other levels of government, with other agencies, about doing things more efficiently and smarter. So that will be a charge for the month of March. And then please report back to me by April 1st, and we'll see what kind of ideas might be able to get some traction. I'd like to also encourage chairs and vice chairs to work together more closely this year. I think in some committees that's worked well. I think it'll be an added benefit if there can be greater collaboration there. And a change I will ask for the legislature meetings, 5-minute committee reports from committee chairs. If there is additional discussion or questions, great, but presentations no more than 5 minutes. I hope that we can make that happen.
I'm guilty of that.
Yes.
We're going to discuss that.
Does that hold for the chair's report also?
Yeah, but not this one. This is, yes.
Just thought I'd ask.
Yes, I promise. You bet.
Question.
Yes?
Is that a requirement of at least 5 minutes or no more than 5 minutes?
No more than 5 minutes.
Thank you.
All right. I will go to the appointments list that's in your packet. You have a number of annual appointments. I won't go through them all. I'll just mention a few changes. Carol Chalk will be the alternate on the MPO, the ITCTC Policy Committee. Pam is stepping down because she's TCAP board chair and has a seat on that committee. And there are a number of appointments that are going to be made by resolution, but I want to highlight the changes. Peter Stein will be the TCOG alternate. And for the IDA, a new appointment, Savanti Myrick, to replace Dan Kogan, filling that seat. That's by resolution that's on tonight's agenda. So other than that, I think you can see the list in your folder. I'd like to talk just for a minute, maybe 5 minutes, about what's ahead for 2012. As Will said, we heard a lot about the state budget at NYSAC this last week. And it seems, according to our early analysis, that there's some good news, but it's not all good news. It seems there will probably be fewer cost shifts to local governments, to county governments, than in the past. But the touted mandate relief is, I'm afraid, really not all it's advertised to be. I will say for the early intervention and preschool special education programs, there are some adjustments in the program. The early estimate is that will save counties overall about $20 million. Is that a year or over 5 years?
A year.
$20 million a year for each of those two programs for all counties statewide. So you can sort of do the math. That's not a lot of money for us. It's a step in the right direction. But, of course, the big one is Medicaid. It's excellent that the governor has picked up the message about mandate relief from his own Medicaid redesign team, from the Citizens Budget Commission, from dozens of state legislators who signed on to Senate Bill 5889 and Assembly Bill 8644. That's NYSAC's proposal for a full Medicaid takeover within 8 years. Very pleased that the governor has noticed those proposals. But his proposals, unfortunately, will not have the intended effect of reducing property taxes for years to come. He's proposed, in fact, some changes that will actually cost us more in the next couple of years, not less. There are a couple of reasons for that. First, he's proposing a phased-in cap that wouldn't start till next calendar year for us, and it would only be a cap on the growth, that 3% automatic growth. And in 2013, it would be 2% growth. 2014, it would be 1%. And 2015, then it would be flat. However, that would be on the base, a compounded base. Right now, that 3% is on the 2005 base, so we know every year what it is. His proposal is that we rebase it starting with 2012. That becomes the new base, so, and then compounded. So the net savings for this coming year compared to the current methodology is about $78,000. Now, everybody in the room knows that our Medicaid bill is about $12 million. So that's really not any kind of meaningful mandate relief. In addition to that, there's a proposal that the state take over the administration of Medicaid, but not for about 3 to 5 years. However, he proposes that they take that he begins this year with a cap on the reimbursement to counties for administrative costs. So that will be a cap based on our 2011 payments. So even salary and benefit increases, even if the roster is the same, salary and benefit increases for 2012, that will be fully funded by counties. We estimate, this is with Tom Herden's help and DSS, that those additional costs in 2013 will be about $90,000 a year. So we're going to save 78, but spend 90, so there's really no mandate relief. There might be a little bit more the following year, and it grows a little bit by 2015, but it's still not dealing with the 28% of our property tax levy that we pay for Medicaid. I'll also mention the pension reforms that are being discussed. Tier 6 may also cost local governments more, according to Tom DiNapoli, the comptroller, especially to get the new system off the ground and implementing it. I mean, it's a whole new system. Some employees will have the defined benefit, and some employees will take the 401k type system. So we'll be operating a dual system for new employees if this goes through. So the comptroller's estimate is that there could be substantial costs to local governments. County leaders emerged from the NYSAC conference, I would say with mixed feelings, worried really that this may be the best we get. If we don't appreciate it, even that might go away. My own feeling, and I won't speak for Joe or Will, but my own feeling is that counties have to do more, that we have the significant argument on our side. We just haven't been really good at telegraphing it. To help with that, NYSAC has launched a citizen action website called mandaterelief.com. You can just type that in, mandaterelief.com. Right away goes to a brief description of the problem and gives people a chance to sign up and send an email to their state legislators. So I'm going to ask Marcia to put that on our homepage to help people take action, very quick action, right away. So there's a baby step in the right direction, at least the conversation about mandate relief. It is true that other governments, schools did not get any mandate relief, as Herb Engman said. Towns didn't get anything that could be called mandate relief. But we have to fight for meaningful mandate relief if we're going to live within the tax cap and, in fact, reduce property taxes. On the brighter side, we can and have to make full advantage of another opportunity, which is the Regional Economic Development Council process. We can be very proud that our planning department will receive $1 million to lead an intensive region-wide sustainability planning effort. It's very exciting that applicants in Tompkins County were awarded funding for many housing projects in the first round of funding. This is all announced in December. In addition, there's been an award for $1 million revolving loan fund, stimulated by Peter Bradaglio in this county, for energy projects in commercial and institutional facilities, and that's already changing the landscape locally. So we did get significant things that really are going to make a difference in our community already in the first round. The Southern Tier Council met yesterday in Binghamton, and we talked about the three significant, very flexible pots of money that we also got for regional economic development, for agriculture-based business development, development of shovel-ready sites for industry, and for downtown redevelopment. And we need to really take advantage of these opportunities. So that's current year. That's those pots of money have been designated for the regional council. and a new round of funding has been promised for application, with applications due in early summer. So the regional council needs to work out many details for those three pots of money, but we don't have to wait for those details. In two meetings so far, I've called together the local representatives to the council and its regional working group and its working groups. That group is eager to continue working together to stimulate development of new applications for these funds, and I'll be calling together another meeting of that group very shortly. You're all very welcome to participate, and stay tuned. I'll let you know when we've got that scheduled. We've been told that the Southern Tier Region's strategic plan was excellent, but that our biggest failing in the first round was that we didn't get enough projects, not enough quality applications. We need to change that, and Tompkins County can lead the way. The creativity, energy, and initiative of our residents only need to be pointed in the right direction. So for 2012, we have a lot to look forward to and much work ahead. Let's commit to pulling together as a group, to working hard together, and working on behalf of our whole community. Thank you. And are there any questions? Pat?
Martha, those three pots of money that you mentioned, what groups or entities will be eligible to apply for that? Is that strictly for counties, or how's that going to work?
Private entities, nonprofits, you know, businesses, farmers. I mean, it's really aimed at farmers.
What about municipalities, other municipalities?
Yes, municipalities, absolutely. I mean, this is part of the problem. This is a whole new process. Mm-hmm. And so some people are a little nervous about, you know, ringing the bell yet, trying to get people to apply. I think we have to get people to know that these things are out there so that people have time to plan. There is information on the website, and I will pull together, as I said, I'll pull together that meeting, and we'll try to make very clear very soon what kind of opportunities there are. Actually, the Rural Fund, Ed maybe should talk about, because it was, I can say it, you won't, your idea. Ed worked on the agriculture working group, and if you wanted to add anything, Ed, about exactly what kind of projects are envisioned. Sorry, you were sitting in the back. Put you on the spot.
Certainly didn't intend to speak on that. We don't know exactly how it's going to work, but the idea was to provide funding for projects in the rural sector of the economy that would open up new markets, create new products, create new economic opportunities. In agriculture, but also in potentially in forestry and other rural businesses. So something that hasn't really been there before, and hopefully it will help a lot of new ideas get off the ground. And we have a lot of those coming out of Tompkins County.
So, yes, we'll get descriptions of what kinds of projects and applicants would be eligible, because I'm really interested in having people have as much time as possible to get those applications together. Last fall, it was a ridiculously short time frame, and we need to use every week that we have before, you know, to get our best applications together.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, thank you. County Administrator's Report, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Martha. I'll try to go quickly through my report. You've done a nice job in characterizing and summarizing the governor's budget and its effect on us. It does look to be roughly a wash. I will say what's happening right now with Medicaid has been characterized as a reduction. We're not going to see reduced costs. Our Medicaid budget next year will go up by something like $250,000. That will chew up $250,000 of a cap that will be someplace in the $850,000 range. So there's still significant growth occurring in our Medicaid budget next year, even under this mandate relief measure. We'll also say that the Youth Services Bureau takes a disproportionate cut in this budget. A lot of runaway and homeless youth programming has been significantly diminished in this budget. Otherwise, Martha nailed it. It is basically a wash for us. We did spend some time, as Will indicated, lobbying while we were in Albany with the NYSAC group. We talked about a number of things, and I think you've all seen the agenda of things we talked about. We did ask for a carve-out of counties like ours from the CHA regulations. We asked for legislation that would exempt us from those new emergency regulations so that we can consummate the sales of our CHAs that we started before the emergency regulations. We talked about youth budget cuts. and the desire to restore those. We talked about Medicaid. We talked about indigent defense. I think you know that I'm on the indigent defense board. The pitch to the state was there's about $11 million of money that's intended for indigent defense, which means to counties' indigent defense programs, that has been swept and diverted to other state programs. That's county money that has gone elsewhere, so we talked about that. And lastly, we talked about hydrilla. And I don't know if Pam is going to talk about that as a part of your 5 minutes, but I do want you to know, and I think you do, that Craig Schutt was at the joint budget hearing today making a pitch for between $700,000 and $1 million a year for 5 to 8 years, which is what we think it's going to take to be able to eradicate hydrilla now where it is in about 200 acres within Tompkins County before it causes serious economic, environmental, and recreational damage to the entire Finger Lakes and maybe Great Lakes system. And I think we've really made an effective case that that's the best course for the state to take. So that happened today with Craig presenting on behalf, really, of the county and the city, as well as soil and water. So that's basically the Albany front. A couple of other things, just to bring you up to date on our two high-level recruitment efforts. I'll report to you on highways. We have received about 7 resumes. The recruitment will close within the next week. We'll meet, the search committee will meet toward the end of this month to begin looking at resumes and whittling down the candidates. I'm going to ask Paula to spend just a minute to bring you up to speed. Paula is chairing the search committee for the mental health commissioner. And Paula, if you can just spend a minute to bring folks up to speed on that.
Sure. Our recruitment for a mental health commissioner officially began December 7th. We currently have 17 applications that meet the minimum qualifications. This coming Friday, February 10th, is the deadline for all interested applicants. Because we have an online secure website for all of the applications to be posted, the search committee members are able to look at the applications and review them as soon as they are posted. So everyone's sort of keeping up to speed on that because February 21st, is when the search committee comes back together to then begin the rating process and start to set up interviews.
I think there's just one other note that I'd like to make on a different front. And it really could have come when we talk about the management salary plan, and maybe it should, but I do think it's important for the public that watches what we do here to have a perspective on what we've done with our labor force over the past few years, and you will make a decision later on about the management salary plan, and I'm not meaning to prejudice that at all, but just to bring the public up to speed on where we are with our workforce. Since 2009, we have reduced our labor force by almost 9% since 2009. So as people wonder what the county has done to react to these difficult times, one of the answers is we've tried to become more efficient. We've reduced our workforce, and that cut is almost 9% of our workforce. The other thing that maybe is less known is we now have about 75% of our workforce under contract. That doesn't count the management employees. And I think it's really important to emphasize that in spite of the fact that we're trying to do more with less, the wage agreements that we've reached with our unions show, I think, two things. One, a respect that we have for the value of the service that people provide who work for the county. And second, I think it shows the appreciation that our employees have for the difficult circumstances that we're in. And just to remind you of basically the structure that has been followed, while we were reducing our workforce in the years 2010 and 2011, our employees, the ones that have settled, received no pay increase at all during that period of time. There were zero increases. In 2012, this year, those employees will receive a one-time bonus of $1,250. But that's a one-time bonus. It doesn't roll into base. And for the next 2 years, their wages will increase by 2% in each of the next 2 years. And while their wages are going up by that modest 2%, they're also paying higher drug copays to offset some of that increase on the budget. So I do think it's important for people as they watch what we're doing and see how we respond to these circumstances to understand what we've done on that important cost center in the budget. And again, it's not to gloat. It's not to do anything except to explain to people that we are responsive to our environment. And when I say we, it extends to this legislature and also the employees who have negotiated with us on these plans. So I just wanted to make that note before we went much farther. And that's my report.
Thank you very much, Joe. Any questions? Julie.
This isn't a question. I would ask that Joe's remarks on workforce be in the minutes.
Okay. All right. Duly noted. No pun intended. We received, back to the NYSAC conference, I wanted to let you know we received a number of documents. The organization, for the first time really, has put together a very nice, concise, readable set of documents on each of the mandates that we're required to provide. And then this other side of this folder, which I'll leave on top of the mailboxes, is about the state budget testimony from NYSAC and a summary of the executive budget, so you can see what's in there. So stay tuned for more information as we get it. With that, I'd like to call a 10-minute recess. So, thank you. We'll be back at 5 o'clock.